For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. February the 18th, and in Shmuel Beis, we are in Perek Yud Gimel. Last week we finished the discussion of Tamar and Amnon, and now we have the aftermath, which is that Avshalom is out to take revenge on what happened to his sister. So, we read Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22, but let's read it one more time. Avshalom did not speak to Amnon from good to bad, from bad to good. Ki sane Avshalom es Amnon, because Avshalom hated Amnon. Al devara she'ina es Tamar achoso, because he molested Tamar, his sister. So Avshalom does not speak to Amnon at all. Does not talk bad, does not talk good. The Mevarshim, the commentaries say from here, at least this is one source for it, that when a person hates somebody else or has a reason to be resentful towards somebody else, not talking to the person only makes the resentment fester, does not make it go away. We tend to think, well, if we just avoid it, so it will just it'll go away over time. Things could go away over time, but that's only when there's interaction. When there's no interaction, then it's just the opposite. It remains, because in your own mind, in your own thoughts, you just keep replaying everything that happened, and every new piece of information that you get about the other person is constantly interpreted through the lens of resentment. So it's just, oh, now they're doing something, now they're out to get me again, now they're out to get me again, now they're doing something more. Everything is just more and more building on the hatred. When there's interaction, then there's a possibility that over time things will abate, because I see that, you know, the person's not so bad, the person has some good parts. Yes, they hurt me, but then there's also sometimes that they were nice to me, and, you know, it begins to thaw a little bit. But not if there's no interaction at all. And here, there was no interaction, and therefore the hatred remained as strong as it had been, and it lasts 2 years, as we see. Puzzle Gimel, verse 23, Vayhi Mishnasayim Yamim, was after 2 years, Vayu Gozuzim La Avshalom, there were shearers, those who shear the sheep, for Avshalom, Beva'al Chatzor, in a place called Ba'al Chatzor, Asher Im Ephraim, which is with Ephraim, meaning it's in the portion of Ephraim, not near Yerushalayim, not in Yehuda, but rather in the portion of Ephraim. Vayikra Avshalom L'chol B'nei HaMelech, and Avshalom called to all the sons of the king, all of his family, all the extended family of the king's family. Avshalom invited them to a party to celebrate the shearing of the sheep. We've had in Sefer Shmuel another party with shearing of the sheep. Anybody remember where we had a sheep shearing party?
When he was made king, wasn't it? When Shaul was made king, weren't they?
I don't think they were shearing the sheep then.
We had a very having a party.
Right. We had a very specific reference to a sheep shearing party. The hint is that David was not invited. The second hint is that because David wasn't invited, the person who didn't invite him was in big trouble.
We're really bad, huh?
Well, it's been a long time.
His own father, when he brought the sons together.
No, that wasn't the sheep shearing. No. Nabal, Abigail's former husband, right. When he made a sheep shearing party, right. Refused to give anything to David's men, refused to include David's men, even though David's men had protected him throughout the time that his sheep were grazing. And he ended up being killed, not by David, even though David wanted to kill him, but Abigail stopped him, then Hashem killed Nabal.
But wasn't that when the vineyards were being ready?
I believe that was a sheep shearing. I believe that was sheep.
So his getting drunk on the wine had nothing to do with that.
Right, well, he got drunk on the wine because it was a party. Okay. Right. So
it must have been something like a harvest time for the animals.
That's right. Yep. That's exactly what it was. Here it is. Vayhi bigzoz es tzono ba Carmel. Back in Shmuel Aleph Perek chapter 25, it says that he was shearing his sheep. Rashi in both places says that it was the custom when shearing sheep to throw a party. Now, we suggested back then, and we can make the same suggestion here, that why was it a party when they sheared the sheep? Now, the simple answer is because it was an auspicious time. It's like the harvest. But it seems to be there was with Yehuda, in the tribe of Yehuda, where they made parties for shearing the sheep. And we suggested then, because the whole Malchus Beis David, the whole lineage of David's house, comes through a sheep shearing. Mm-hmm. Which sheep shearing?
When Yehuda and
That's
his
right.
friend.
Yeah. Right. Yehuda and Tamar, that whole story comes about through a sheep shearing when Yehuda was going to shear his sheep, and that's when Tamar went to entice him, and then the whole thing began from there. So I suggested then, I would suggest again, that it could be that's why it was the minhag, it was the custom in Yehuda to have to particularly celebrate the shearing of the sheep. Be that as it may, he's throwing this party and he invites the entire extended royal family. Pasuk Chavdal, verse 24, Vayavo Avshalom el Hamelech. Avshalom comes to the king, Vayomer, he says, Hineina gozizim le'avdecha, behold now, there's shearers for your servant. Let the king and his servants come with his servant. Come to the sheep shearing party. The Mefarshim, the Ralbag makes this point, say that was a highly unusual request. Avshalom knew full well that it would be very unusual for the king and his entire entourage to come to a sheep shearing party, even though it is his own son's party. But the fact is that you want them to come from the royal palace to the portion of Ephraim for a party. And the king was a very busy man, and he was running a country. It was not likely that he would come, even to his own son's party. It was just a very, very unlikely request to be fulfilled. And the king does refuse. Vayomer HaMelech al Avshalom, the king says, Avshalom, al bini, don't my son, al no nelech kulano, let us not all go, v'lunich bar alecha, we shouldn't put too much pressure on you. The king tries to, well, why should we make it difficult for you? Vayifrat bo, so Avshalom really pushed him, really, really pushed hard, v'lo aval aleches, he didn't want to go. The king didn't want to go. Vayivarachayu, and he benched him. He gave him a bracha. Vayomer Avshalom. Avshalom said, "V'lo yelech no yitanu Amnon achi. Shouldn't at least my brother Amnon come with us?" So we now see what Avshalom's plan here was. He knew full well that David would almost certainly say no, but by asking for David to come and then really pushing for it, and David continually saying no, refusing. Then he asks for something else. It's much harder to continually say no. You know how it is, right? Kids are really good at this, right? They you know what it's like. To continually say no is very, very hard. So he deliberately asked for something which he was 99% sure would be refused, and he pushed really hard for it. And he was refused, but then he pushes for something else. And still the king isn't so keen on it. The king said to him, "Why should he go with you? Why does the king not want Amnon to go with him?" Okay, so the king, David HaMelech, as we know, is a highly intelligent person. He's well aware of the hatred between Avshalom and Amnon, and he is not so excited about this prospect of Amnon going. Vayifratz bo Avshalom. So Avshalom again pushes very hard. So the king here relents, but the king is concerned over the situation. Therefore, Vayishlach ito es Amnon. He sent Amnon with him. Ve'es kol b'nei HaMelech, with the entire royal family. Now, if you're in David's shoes and you know that there is resentment, and Avshalom is pushing really hard, and you feel that you've got to give in to something, so you're going to try to protect the situation. I don't know if you mean protecting Amnon. You don't want there to be a fight. You don't want there to be a big machlokes. What's the best way to make sure that things stay civil and calm?
Send a bunch of people.
Okay, so make it a larger party. As you know, when people are in public, they tend to behave a little bit better than they do when they're in private. Don't let it be the situation where there's this little thing between the day, you know, Avshalom and Amnon are sitting across from the table each other and they begin a whole argument, rehashing what happened. I don't know that David was afraid for Amnon's life. He may have just been afraid for a big machlokas. You don't want fighting. If it's a big royal family event, so there's less likely for two individuals to get into an entire argument. We find this practically. We all know this happens all the time within family dynamics also social dynamics. You don't really want to go, you know, like there's issues. You don't really want to be there. But when there's a lot of people, then all right, you'll go, you'll nod politely, say hello, and you'll go talk to somebody else. You just won't, you know. That we all know. We've all done that. We've all been in situations where other people have done that, and we know that's how it works. So David here figures that when you've got a lot of people, there's less likely to end up with a big problem.
Why is it that when Absalom, when it's talking, it's saying the king instead of his father?
That was just a respectful way of talking. They would speak about the king in that way.
So he doesn't have any resentment towards David for David not having done anything?
I don't think so. It doesn't say that he did. Now, we are going to find Absalom is going to end up rebelling against his father, but that we haven't gotten to that point yet. Absalom is a person who is definitely ambitious. But we don't see anywhere, we haven't found anywhere that Absalom bears resentment towards his father. It seems like he reserved his resentment for Amnon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no, I just didn't know if that was separating.
Yeah, I don't believe so.
We've already heard in an earlier pasuk that Absalom invited all the king's sons. So why are we hearing again that David is taking care to send all of the king's sons?
I think that's emphasizing the point. Meaning that since he's sending it, the fact that Absalom invited them doesn't mean they were going to go. And David's making a point, I want everybody going. I'm not going to go, but I want everybody to go. Now this is critical for the story, as we'll see as it unfolds. The fact that they're all there, which David was hoping would prevent a machlokas, actually makes the situation at least seemingly much worse. So look what happens. Pasuk Chavches, verse 28. Vayitzav Avshalom et ne'arav lemor. Avshalom commands his young men, saying, Re'una, see now, kitov lev Amnon bayayin. When the heart of Amnon is good with wine. What phrase does that remind you of? Topical. Yeah. It says in the Megillah, kitov lev hamelech bayayin. When the king's, right? What did he do? When his heart was good with wine?
He killed
Vashti. Right. Right. So anyway, when you see that Amnon's heart is good with wine, V'amarti aleichem, I will tell you, Hakues Amnon, strike Amnon, V'hamitemo, so and kill him. Al tirou, don't be afraid. Haloki anochi tzivisiyeschem. I am the one who commanded you. Aren't I the one who's commanded you? Now, you have nothing to worry about. You're only acting on my orders. So you won't get in trouble. Chizku, be strong, v'yu v'nechayel, and be for soldiers, be good soldiers. Mm-hmm. Do as I bid you. Vayasu nare Avshalom la'amnon, and the lads of Avshalom did to Amnon kasher tziva Avshalom, as Avshalom commanded. Vayakumu kol b'nei ha-melech, and all the family of the king got up. Vayirkavu ish al pirdo vayanu, so they all got up on their mules, right? And they ran away. They all got up on their, they jumped into their cars and drove off.
Did they think they were next?
It could be they thought they were next. Now, David's plan succeeded somewhat. It seems that Absalom realized that he himself could not strike Amnon. It would have been too obvious if he would have come over to Amnon, stood too close to him, got too much. People would have, you know, why is he talking? You know, people would have.
It would be one on one also. It would just be one-on-one.
It'd be one-on-one, right. But the Na'arim were probably inconspicuous because they were probably waiting on people, hanging around, you know, making sure the grill was going well. You know, like you didn't notice the Ne'arim walking around. That's just they're the people. They're Avshalom's people walking around. Avshalom was a presence. He was the Baal Simcha. It was his party. Right. And second of all, he's Avshalom. So had he come too close to Amnon, even though Amnon had drunk a lot of wine, it's likely Amnon would have been on his guard. Other people would have been on their guard. But with having the Ne'arim, the lads, so they were able to get very close to him and kill him. And then the family is afraid and they run off.
You would have thought Amnon would have stayed away anyway.
You would have thought. But it seems that the king and Amnon both were not worried that this was a dangerous situation. Pasuk Lamed, verse 30. Vayihem abaderech, and they were on the road, meaning the family of the king, the rest of the royal family, was on the road coming back to Yerushalayim. Vahashmua ba el David lemar, and the rumor, the news came to David saying, you know how the rumor mill works? The hika Avshalom es kol b'nei hamelech. People started getting texts that Avshalom struck down all of the royal family. No one is left. So one thing led to another. You know how it works. One person says, somebody, Avshalom killed somebody. Who did he kill? It was like, I heard it was 3 people. I heard it was 10 people. I heard it was, and then, you know, right? And it just gets out of hand. So the rumor came back that the entire royal family was killed out by Avshalom. Vayakam Hamelach, the king got up. Vayikra es begadav, and he tore his clothing. The Gemara uses this as one of the proofs that one is supposed to stand when tearing their clothes for a deceased relative. And he tore his clothing. Vayishkaf artza, and he laid down on the ground, which means that he was just completely overwhelmed by what happened. V'chol avadav nitzavim, and all of his servants were standing around him. Kiru'ei v'gadam, also their clothing was torn. So they thought there was a tremendous disaster that just occurred.
Why didn't he? Why don't we get this about tearing his clothing when Michal's firstborn was killed?
Okay, good.
When died.
Good. Okay, good question. So let's. It's a good question. The Mefarshim actually contrast the two. And let's go a little further. We'll see more of a contrast. Vayan Yonadav bin Shima achi David vayomer. Yonadav bin Shima, the brother of David. Shima is the brother of David. Yonadav is the nephew of David. Answered, and he said, now who is Yonadav? We had him earlier in the story. Okay, so Yonadav here comes full circle. He's the one 2 years ago who gave the advice to Amnon to lie in bed and have David come visit him and then ask for Tamar to come to feed him. So now Yonadav seizes the opportunity here because he has information that he knows about, and he's going to use it for his own advancement, as we'll see. Well, for his own reputation, he's going to try to build. He's going to try to use it to his advantage. And he said, "Don't let my master say that they killed all of the royal family. It is only Amnon who died. Now Yonadav doesn't have any better information than anybody else, but he knows to sift through the rumors." And he recognizes what's the true statement. He says, "Ki al pi Avshalom haisa sima miyom anoso es tamar achoso," because by the mouth of Avshalom was this idea, this command from the day that Tamar molested, that Amnon molested his sister Tamar. Avshalom has been planning this for the past 2 years, says Yonadav. How does Yonadav know that better than anybody else? Because Yonadav was on the inside in what happened over there between Amnon and Tamar. He knows that Amnon was, well, at least he had given Amnon the idea with Tamar. And Yonadav, he is wise, although he is wise with an evil intent, and he knows that Avshalom is out to get Amnon. Now he continues, Al Yosim Adoni Amelech Alibo Davar Lemar, don't let my master the king put to his heart saying, Kol Bnei Hamelech Mesu, all of the royal family died, Ki Amnon Levado Mes, Amnon himself has died, and that is it. Vayivrach Avshalom, now the narrator continues, Avshalom ran away. Vayisa hanar hatsofes einav, the lad, what do you call this person? The lookout. The lookout, meaning from the palace, lifted his eyes and he saw. Vayar, and he saw. Vihine am rav hochim midarach acharav. There was a large group going from the path around him, meaning like they came like from the side, mitzad ahar, from the side of the mountain. So he sees there was a group on their way there. The Navi doesn't mention this specifically, but the lookout relays this information. There's a group on their way. And Yonadav, again, becomes the wise person interpreting all the events. Yonadav says to the king, Hine b'nei ha-melech bo, here, you'll see, now will come the royal family, kidvar abdecha, like the words of your servant, king Haya, so it has been, so it has come to be. You see, I'm right, here they are. And in fact, it was when he finished speaking, behold, the sons of the king have come. So he was right, he was vindicated, that it was all a rumor, really only Amnon was killed, but the rest of them are fine. They lifted their voices and they cried, because they witnessed the murder of their brother. And also the king and all of his servants cried a great cry. Avshalom barach. Avshalom had escaped. Vayelach al Talmai ben Amihud, Melech Geshur. And he went to Talmai ben Amihud, the king of Geshur. So neighboring country, Geshur. That's where he went. Why did he go there?
Because the law can't reach him there.
True. But this specific country is because Talmai ben Amihud was related to Avshalom.
On the mother's side?
Mm-hmm. He was his biological grandfather. Even though halachically they're not related, because his mother had converted, nevertheless, there is a biological relationship, and that's why he runs to Talmai. Vayisabel al beno kol hayamim, and he, going back to David now mourns for his son all the days. Now, all the days means for the next foreseeable future. So David is mourning over the loss of Amnon, at least so it seems. V'Avshalom barach v'yelech Geshur, again Avshalom had escaped and went to Geshur. V'hisham shalosh shanim, and he was there for 3 years. V'atechal David HaMelech latzeis el Avshalom, and David HaMelech began to desire to miss Avshalom, ki nicham al Amnon, for he had now been consoled about Amnon, ki meis, for he had died. Meaning, after 3 years, David finally gets over the death of Amnon. It's been 3 years, so that, and now he begins to really want to see Avshalom again. He misses Avshalom. As long as David was very upset over Amnon's death, since Avshalom was the one who killed him, David is not thinking about Avshalom too much. But now that he has, for the large part, gotten over Amnon's death, he now is misses his son Avshalom, which will be the segue into the next parak, the next chapter, where Yoav ben Tseruiah will step in to arrange the reunification of the reuniting of David and Avshalom. So that's why we end the parak, we end the chapter with this statement that now David has gotten over the loss of Amnon and is now looking to see Avshalom again.
Why does it say twice in two different places that Avshalom
ran away? Yeah.
You know, first time without any detail and the second time with detail. And what's bothering me is you don't hear how David mourned what happened to Tamar.
Right.
That bothers me.
Right. But when we talked about it a little bit last time about that. But So, but the question of why it says that he ran away twice, it's true. It is redundant. I'm not sure why it's being emphasized in that way. The Mitzvah David says that the first statement was just to tell you he ran away, and the second one is to tell you how long he was there, which is true. I mean,
and where he went.
Well, it's even the first time it says where he went.
Okay.
He went to Talmai. In Pasuk Lamed Zayin, in 37, it says he went to Talmai. And then in Lamechesen 38, right?
Yeah, but in 34,
yeah,
it says
yeah. There it said he fled, but didn't tell you at all any details. Let's just say he got away.
Why have it?
Because well, he
so
got
you know
away.
He
no,
got,
no, but just put the details in there.
No, there just says he got away.
I know, but why not say the details at
oh,
that point
okay.
in time?
All right. All right. It could be that'll break the flow of the story.
And then figure, oh, I'll go here.
It yeah. could be. Over there, it could be the main point was to tell you he got away, the other ones are coming back, and, you know, we don't want to break the flow of what of the whole story of how many people were actually killed and where the royal family is. Now we kind of move back to Avshalom, but still it's repeated in Lamed Zayin Lamed Ches, 37 and 38. It says twice Avshalom had escaped and where he went. So it's a little bit funny to why that is repeated, which is a good point. It's a very good point, and perhaps we'll be able to figure something out. But that should have an explanation why that is.
In 37, it doesn't say he went to Geshur. It says he went to Talmai, the son of so-and-so, the king of Geshur. But that doesn't necessarily mean.
Uh-huh. Interesting. I mean, there it's emphasizing that he went to his grandfather, his biological grandfather. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, okay. Let's deal with that. Let's deal with that. But I want to deal with that within a larger context.
Said he fled three times and he was there 3 years. I wonder if there's a connection.
Interesting.
Between
That's an interesting point. Good. Interesting point. Now, Avshalom planned this killing of Amnon. And the king thought that there would not be any killing. Again, I don't think the king was afraid for Amnon's life. I think he was afraid more of a big machlokas, a big blow up, where there's just this huge family, fight that'll happen in the middle of the party. So he feels that if you send a lot of people, things will be okay. Now, as we explained in the story of.
But if he knew that the four things or whatever it was were
going to
happen.
Okay, that's
happen.
About the same. Good, good, good. Okay. So as we explained with the story of Tamar before, that the reason why it was relatively easy to get David to allow this whole scheme of Tamar coming to Amnon is because when David goes in to visit Amnon and Amnon looks ill, David immediately jumps to conclusions that Amnon is the next victim who's going to die because of David's sin. And David is correct. And it is correct. He's not actually the next one. He's really the third one because Tamar is really the second victim.
But she didn't die.
She didn't die, but she's obviously hurt very badly. So David is correct that Amnon is going to be a victim, but he jumps to that conclusion immediately upon seeing it. Now, in the end of the story over there, instead of Amnon being killed, Tamar is, so to speak, killed. She's not actually killed, but she is very badly hurt, and her whole life changes. So David there is faced with a second victim. First victim was the first child of Bathsheba. Second victim is Tamar. And the way Tamar is victimized is with an intimate relationship, which was the way David sinned, was with an intimate relationship. So David can't fail to see that there is some punishment to him. Now, we have not explained yet, we have to get to this, we have not explained yet how, we understand that David could be punished, but we haven't explained how does that justify that his children get hurt. How does it justify Tamar getting hurt? How does it justify Amnon getting killed? How does it justify Avshalom eventually getting killed as well? Those are the things we have not explained. But let's just see from David's perspective right now. So from David's perspective, he has witnessed the death of the baby. Now he thought he was going to see the death of his oldest son, Amnon, and instead sees the molestation of his daughter, Tamar. So he has two sons who are not getting along with each other. He knows that. They're not. He knows Avshalom and Amnon are not getting along with each other. Avshalom wants to invite David to this party, he doesn't want to go, and now he pushes for Amnon to come. So David sends everybody. Again, it doesn't appear that David was afraid of Amnon being killed. It seems like he was more afraid of a very big fight happening. Amnon is killed, and the rumor comes back that the entire royal family was killed. Now, David knows that he is going to be punished. Exactly how he'll be punished, which way he'll be punished, but he knows there's punishment on the way for him. If the baby died, that was a clear punishment to him. Amnon gets sick, David jumps to conclusions, here's another punishment to me. Tamar gets hurt, again, punishment to me. That the entire royal family should be killed out, that already seems to be more than what David is expecting to happen. If immediately the news would have come, Amnon was killed, David might have right away said, there it is, there's another one. I deserve this. This is because of my sin. But instead of that happening, he gets a rumor that the entire family was killed out, which is a very heavy punishment. Now, it could still be a punishment, but it seems really a lot. So this is what David would not have expected to happen. When he sent the whole family, he was sending the whole family as a protective measure to avoid a big problem. Then the whole family gets killed? That means David's very attempt to keep things calm ended up turning into a huge tragedy. So the slap in his face, the way it's thrown back at him, is huge. So David is just completely overwhelmed with what happens. Tears his clothing, falls to the ground, and just lies there. Like, the world is coming to an end. Yonadav, who was the scoundrel who started the whole thing, now steps forward, and once again, remember the first time, he took advantage of David's vulnerability. Of David feeling vulnerable, feeling that he's going to... Yonadav steps in and again takes advantage of David's vulnerability. The first time, it was to help, quote-unquote help, his friend Amnon. His friend Amnon is dead now. So now, who's it to help?
Himself.
I'm going to look really good over here. And that's exactly what Amnon does. What Yonadav does. Yonadav steps in and says, no, king, no, you're overreacting. Trust me on this. It's really not like that at all. Really, it's okay. It's just Amnon who was killed. It's not the whole family. Trust me on this. I'm telling you, Avshalom had an in for Amnon from the beginning. Right? He's now the self-righteous one. Yonadav. Right? Avshalom had an in for Amnon from the beginning because what Amnon did, as if Yonadav had nothing to do with what Amnon did. Right? You know, because what Amnon did to Avshalom's sister Tamar, that's why Avshalom's out to get him. Yonadav is omitting the part, what Amnon did with my advice to Avshalom's sister Tamar. Leave that out, conveniently.
Because nobody knows but him.
Right. And the only witness is dead. Yonadav is off scot-free. The only problem is there's another witness besides
God.
Amnon. That's God. And therefore it is recorded right here. Yonadav is remembered forever as that scheming scoundrel who made himself look good after hurting several people and taking advantage of David. This is where you have Yonadav. So Yonadav successfully makes himself look good. He says that, you know, don't worry about it. And then when the lookout sees a group of people, Yonadav says, that's them. I'm telling you, don't worry about it. That's them. And then they come and see, just like I said, look at that, I was right. Just like I said. Yonadav, this is a very important lesson for all of us. Yonadav wanted to look good. That's what he wanted to do. He tried to take advantage of the situation to look good. And he was successful. But was he successful? Why was he not successful? Because forever after, he's recorded as for everybody to see, wide open. Just read the psukim, read the verses, and you don't think of Yonadav as a good person. It jumps right out at you. Yonadav is a scheming scoundrel. So Yonadav tried really hard to make himself look good, and temporarily he did. Temporarily means in his lifetime. At that moment, he comes out looking really good, and nobody knows. But Hashem says to Yonadav, you think you're going to get away with this? You think you're going to give yourself this excellent reputation? We'll see who laughs last. You're going to take advantage of people like that? We'll see what your reputation is like when the Navi records what happened. And in fact, forever after, Yonadav is looked down upon. He doesn't become, he's not ignored in this story. He's in the story, right there front and center, so everybody can see what kind of person he was. So it's a tremendous lesson that even when you think you got away with it, right? There's always a payback.
All right, I'm still stuck. You told us that we can't look at David like with our own eyes because he's a gadol and whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that he knew that Bathsheba was supposed to be his wife, but he went around it about it wrong, right? He had not the right judgment on that.
Yeah.
All right. He knows that Tamar and Amnon have some feelings for each other, but it turns out wrong. He goes about
You got to listen to last week's class for that one. Then we discussed
that one. I did listen.
Okay.
I listened to it before I'm saying anything. And then Amnon, he knows that Absalom wants to kill him. He's got that part. And he still, again, has misjudgment. So he knows something in each of these. And still his judgment is bad three times in a row.
Good.
That's what I'm seeing.
Okay, good.
So just because you know something's going to happen, I mean, I think of like Potiphar's wife and Yosef, like she saw something, but she interpreted it wrong. Like she only knew.
Right.
So I'm seeing that when he knows something, or he intuits it, or whatever, you know, because some of it's not nevuah, I guess, like it's just, he still does the wrong.
Okay, so the first one, which...
Why did Amnon go?
What's that?
Why did Amnon go?
They felt safe.
Why would he?
Because it's been 2 years, and he thought he got away with it.
He hasn't spoken to him in 2 years. Why would he want to go?
The first misjudgment of David, that was a misjudgment, right? And we explained that where that was coming from. Once that happens, Hashem wants to punish David. So it is definitely logical that Hashem is going to give
the same tool.
Yeah. Yeah, let him make a few misjudgments, and that's what's happening over here. And we're not done with misjudgments. We're going to have
one more.
We're going to but the next one's going to be a real big one because it's going to be a whole rebellion. It's going to be a massive rebellion. It's going to be a huge issue right now. It's going to come up. We're snowballing over here. We said that from that story of Bathsheba, we have a snowballing problem for the next. It's all the way through until Perek Chafal, till chapter 21.
One misfortune after another. He has people to ask advice.
We don't know that he didn't ask advice. The Navi's not telling us everything. I mean, we don't know who he spoke to, right?
But he could have spoken to a Navi and still went ahead
It could be. It's clear that Hashem wants these chain of events to happen. Again, we're only looking at it through David's lens because we haven't discussed it from the perspective of, but what did Tamar do to deserve it? What did Amnon do to deserve it? What did Avshalom do? Right? We haven't discussed that.
Or Bathsheba, right.
We haven't gone from that. We're only looking at it right now through it from the perspective of David. So then it turns out only Amnon was killed. Avshalom runs away. David mourns over Amnon. And then finally, he's consoled over Amnon, and now he longs for Avshalom again. Now, as Mrs. Luce pointed out before, the Mefarshim, the commentaries here, they contrast David's reaction to what happened to Amnon. First, the first part of it, that David tears his clothes and falls on the ground, you can't really compare that to any other story that happened, because that's where he thinks the entire royal family was killed out. It's logical that his reaction here is going to be greater than any other reaction. Okay. But even after that, when he finds out that it's only Amnon who was killed, it says the entire royal family cried out, and the king also, he cried with them a great crying. So the contrast is that when the child of Bathsheba was sick, David fasted and he put ashes on his. I mean, he was in complete devastation. And then when he actually died, and the servants were afraid, oh, better not tell him, because if he was upset before he died, imagine what's going to... And instead, when David realizes what's going on, he gets up, he eats, he drinks, and he says, what do you want me to do? I can't change it. He's dead. I can't bring him back. He's not coming to me. I'm going to him. That was David's reaction. So how come over here he's so overcome with grief, where over there he gets over it as soon as there's no more hope?
And here we don't know that he does anything when Amnon's on his way to this party.
It's true, but he didn't realize there was any problem. So over there,
he realized it was going to be. There might be some problem,
yeah.
But he thought he diverted it
right,
all.
Right, he thought he diverted it all. In the case of the baby was sick, so that makes sense.
He knew he couldn't avert it.
Well,
except for with prayer and...
Right, right.
Okay,
so what the Mefarshim say is this, and this to me was very, was very logical, is that with the baby, so when the baby was sick, David knew the baby was going to die. That's what the Navi told him. But David thought, perhaps it's not engraved in stone. Perhaps it can be changed through prayer, through teshuva, through fasting, and that's what David does. And we talked about this at the time, that David's family has the misora, has the tradition, afilu cherav chada munachas al tavaro shel adam, even a sharp sword is lying on the throat of a person, al yimna asmo rachamim, should not hold themselves back from begging for mercy from Hashem, no matter what. That is the mantra of David HaMelech's family. You never give up hope until it's over. So David, the baby's still alive, even though things look terrible. David davens with all his heart. He does teshuvah. He fasts. He's trying very hard. But then the baby dies. So David says, okay. I mean, there's no point in davening anymore. You can't daven to bring the baby back. Now, I said that it's true that we do have a couple of instances in Navi of Tchias HaMesim, but that's a nace. You don't daven for a nace. If it's done, it's done. That's all. It's over. So David says, okay, there's nothing I can do. So he then gets up. But he had no relationship with the baby. The baby only lived 7 days. David has no, or whatever, how many days it was. David has no relationship with the baby. He knew the baby was supposed to be Mashiach, so he's devastated over the loss of the baby, but doesn't have an emotional tie to the baby. But here, Amnon is an adult, and it's his oldest son. You would imagine an oldest son David does have a relationship with. And then when he finds out Amnon has died, as this was from the Ralbag, says that David, this is an emotional reaction. With the baby, it was a logical reaction. It's true, David acted emotionally, but it was an emotion that was driven by logic. It was, hey, it's not over yet. And so therefore, he poured out his emotions. But once the baby died, all right, what can I do? But over here, there is the natural emotional reaction of losing a child, or not a child, as an adult, but a son of his with whom he had a relationship. And so there is that loss, and therefore there's the crying, and he is in mourning for 3 years, which is a long time. Normally we say that only after a year, typically, the loss abates. But it took 3 years before David was ready to begin to think past the loss of Amnon, and the first thing he thinks about is, okay, I lost Amnon, but what about Avshalom? And he wants Avshalom back.
I would think also that the idea of how it happened, that another of his sons killed him.
Okay, that's true too. That's true too.
Led to it, or could have done
okay.
Something.
I mean when it's a sickness, it's you see Hashem's hand clearly.
Yeah.
On here, one son pitted against another son. It's like, really? And that son is the one who molested the daughter. Like, the whole thing is just getting very... It's ugly. It's ugly.
So he didn't realize that the son who died, the infant who died, would have been Mashiach?
No, he didn't know that.
Said, so wouldn't you be mourning the loss of the Mashiach?
Yes, but that's still a spiritual loss. That's not an emotional loss. It's not, there's no, the love that he would have for Amnon, who he knew forever, Amnon must have been, he was an adult, 25, 30-year-old man, right? The relationship, the years that he had with him, that would have been much more meaningful, much more powerful than the baby. So here, it's much harder for him to get past it. That's how the Rabbag explains it.
And when you said that you don't pray for a nace, I was wondering, because like, some commentator always said that the reason that the that our matriarchs didn't have children is because Hashem wanted to hear their prayer, but not all of them had the parts to have the baby, so in essence they were praying for a nace.
Yeah, so the Gemara says that the Mishnah says there's such a thing as a tefilas shav, a worthless prayer. What's a worthless prayer? So the Mishnah gives a couple of examples. Mishnah says one example is a person is coming to the city and he hears crying in the city, wailing in the city, and he says, "Yehi ratzon, may it be Hashem's will that this wailing not be from my house." So the Mishnah says that's a worthless prayer. Tefilas shav. If it's from his house, it already happened. Mm-hmm. You can't change what happened. You could say, "Hashem, please help whoever that is." Now you could say. But to say Yehi ratzon, it shouldn't be from my house, that you're trying to change the past. Can't do that. So that's a worthless prayer. That's one example. The other example the Mishnah says is, if a person's wife is expecting, and then he says, may it be Hashem's will that this child be a boy. So the Mishnah says that's a worthless prayer. Because if it's a boy, it already is a boy. If it's a girl, it already is a girl. You can't change that. Oh, so the Gemara asks, what about Leah? Leah changed a boy to a girl, right? So one answer of the Gemara is, that's Leah. That's Leah, right? You can't prove anything from Leah. So Leah, she can make an ace happen, but you can't. Regular people, we can't expect from ourselves that kind of thing. So the Gemara acknowledges that the Avos and the Imahos, they're on a different plane.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
I'll give them that.
Where David stands right now, how many losses has he endured? He lost the baby. Tamar got hurt in a terrible way. Amnon is dead.
And he's missing Avshalom.
Mm. See, David might be thinking, that's four. Mm. As Tamar wasn't killed, but she's counted as one of the four. So who says it means death? It could just mean a loss. He loses Tamar to it in a certain way. He loses Tamar. There is a certain loss that he has. Of course, Tamar has a loss, but David himself, even from his perspective, there's a loss over here. And one could argue he's lost Avshalom, not just physically that Avshalom is not with him, but he's also lost, if you want to call it, the purity of Avshalom. Avshalom murdered somebody. You want to say Amnon deserved it? Maybe yeah, maybe no. That's really a court decision. Here, Avshalom killed his brother. So you can argue that he might have lost Avshalom on a spiritual level. Mm-hmm. That Avshalom is no longer the great tzaddik he once was. At least perhaps you could think of it that way. So just like the Tamar is no longer the even though Tamar is a great tzaddikus, that has not changed at all. But Tamar is no longer the person who she was before, who had many more opportunities available to her before the incident, and after the incident she has few opportunities available to her. Avshalom, likewise. It could be that, you know, he's down a notch.
Yeah.
So that's a loss. That's a loss. So it could be that David at this point may believe that he's gotten everything. He's gotten all the punishments. So when he's now misses Avshalom, and his heart goes out to Avshalom, the question is, what is the realistic expectation of David over here? If in fact Avshalom is down a notch, then it could be that David realizes it's never going to be the same. It's never going to be the same. Just like Tamar will never be the same, Avshalom will never be the same. But at least we can try something. At least we can. David is not going to do anything. He's he misses Avshalom. He feels the loss of Avshalom, but he doesn't do anything about it. It's going to be Yoav who's going to orchestrate the reuniting of David and Avshalom. But David doesn't do it. And it could very well be, the reason is because David sees this as a permanent loss. This is it. I mean, this is what Hashem's plan is. And I'm done. I'm not going to get Avshalom back. We've lost him. So that could be. Now, David doesn't realize that this is only the beginning with Avshalom. It's going to be much, much, much worse. Whatever down a notch he was before, not only will Avshalom be killed, but prior to being killed, he's going to go down lots of notches. There's going to be lots of problems with Avshalom before he's actually killed. So but David may not realize that. He doesn't know the future, and it could be at this point he sees this as, all right, that's all. You know, I've lost four children.
Wasn't there a prophecy about his wives also them taking?
Yes, that hasn't happened yet. That hasn't happened yet, that his wives will be molested. That hasn't happened. And it could be he figures it'll be a different way. And it could also be that David tries to do teshuvah. And just like with the baby, David may not have just given up that it's for sure going to happen. But when he walks in and sees Amnon on his deathbed, I guess my teshuvah isn't working. Right? So here, Avshalom is gone.
What number son is Avshalom? Do we know?
Avshalom, I think, is third. I think so. Kilov is the second one.
There were
a lot of children, but there were six wives.
Yeah.
So
and they all went to this party, right? It's like there's a big group.
Yeah, it may be many children. I mean, I imagine each wife had several children.
Okay, so we don't know.
Except for Michal, they all probably had many children. But we're the names we know about are the most prominent ones, which are the first, the oldest of all the wives. Okay. Now we do need to tackle the whole topic of what about the children themselves? The baby is a whole different discussion. But the adults, they have free will. Why should they be killed or hurt because of what David did? I mean, this is a whole, obviously, huge philosophical discussion. And we have to have that talk. So, the next, we're up to a point where we could theoretically stop here, not tonight, but we could theoretically stop here and use the next class to tackle this issue. Just pause and discuss it. It'll be a big talk. So we may do it here, although we're not really done the story. Because, as I said, the whole thing snowballs for the next, we have another seven chapters of these events. So I'm debating about it. So next time, I'll decide over the next couple of weeks which way to go, whether to stop here and tackle that whole issue or to just move on and save that for a little bit later. So we'll see as we... Okay.
Thank you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.